Hello, everyone. This is Dr. Joanne Dahlketter with Performing Edge Coaching International, and it is November the 25th, 2014. And so today we're going to be talking about exercises and techniques to work with teams, both teams and these also apply to individual athletes, too. So we've been continuing our discussion in that area. I know, Greg, you sent in lots of great questions before, so I wanted to get to some of those again, finish answering those questions that you had emailed me. And thanks, Greg, for sending those anyway.
You're welcome.
Yeah. And I just our next call. These calls, of course, are always on the second and fourth Thursday of the month at 9 a.m. Pacific. So the next one will be December 11th at Thursday. So it's the 11th, and then the following one after that, the 25th, is Christmas. So, you know, again, we can do it on the Tuesday, the 23rd, instead of Thursday, if you want to mark your calendars to avoid the holidays there. So, yeah, so that's great. So I just had a really piece of good news that I wanted to announce first, and that's that hopefully we have two, you know, certification coaches, students that are going through the certification program now that are in Mexico City, and they were on the call a couple weeks ago, and they were named to be the mental training coaches for the Mexico, you know, country of Mexico in the Central American Games. And Central American Games are like the, I guess, the next best thing to the Pan American Games there, where they have the countries like Colombia, Venezuela, Puerto Rico, and Mexico competing. And so they are the mental training coaches for the equestrian team in dressage. And so they emailed me, and they're actually doing the individual program, so I was able to talk with them after they worked with their athletes. And they emailed and said that their athletes actually won the team gold medal, and the individual, and they got one gold medal for the team, and then one gold medal for individual, and one bronze medal in individual. There's various competitions within dressage. So, hopefully they'll be joining us here, too. They were trying to get on via Skype and kind of talk about their experience. If they can't get on this week, maybe the next call. So just wanted to congratulate them that we have gold medal, we're producing gold medals in our Performing Edge Coach Certification Program. So very exciting. And they sent me a picture, too, with them, Annie and Fernando, as the mental training coaches, along with the federation, the president of the federation, and the three athletes getting their medals all in one picture there. So I'll post that on the Performing Edge Coach website there, too. So, yeah, very exciting that, that is happening. We're actually, you can work at all levels in this certification, just regular grassroots teams, high school and college, all the way up to, top-level athletes that are working in these international competitions. So, that's very exciting. And so maybe I'll share some of the things. They had very challenging group dynamics. They were mentioning that they might have, if you were on that call a couple weeks ago, they talked about how the teams, I asked them what challenges the team is having, and they said, well, they all hate each other. There's just six people on the team, and I said, why is that? And he said, well, they're all ex-husbands and ex-wives. And actually the trainer, one of the trainers is an ex-husband of one of the athletes. So there's a lot of team dynamics there. And they said that that's amazing that even though there was a lot of fighting going on and frustrations because they all have this past history the way they framed it with the athletes was very important to say, we're not here to be friends. We acknowledge that, you know, you all have your own personal stories and background stories, you know, but we're here to focus and to work together as best we can and to get the, you know, put on the best performance we can for Mexico. So, it really worked out, even though there were different factions, you know, two groups eating separately all the time at lunchtime and all of that. They were able to bring that together get the gold medal. So very exciting stuff, and just hopefully they'll be on the call here today or next time. And I wanted to share one of the – have them share, or if they're not on, I'll share one of the team-building exercises that they did. So, so just wanted to check in with all of you here, too. Anything, questions you have or a progress report, anything that you're doing with your athletes right now, teams or individuals you want to report or just, share with us? Anybody can jump in.
Yeah, I've got the men's soccer team that I worked with from Colorado, from Mesa, Colorado.
Uh-huh.
Made it to the Final Four national in the NCAA championships.
Oh my gosh, fantastic!
So they invited me to come down and work with them next week at the Final Four. So that's going to be quite exciting for me, anyway.
Oh yeah! Wow! Congratulations! So that's Final Four for the college level or high school?
Yeah. College level soccer, yeah, Division II.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so they'll be going to, is it national championships, or what are they called?
Yep. Yes, the national championship, the NCAA national championship.
Great. Wow.
Yep.
And so do you want to share how you're working with them or so far, or have you been working with them up to this point?
Yeah, all year. Yeah, I started with them the first week that they got together in August, and have worked with the coach throughout. Every week we have a phone call conversation based on the mental side of the game, you know, how the team is progressing, any personality issues that, you know, have a tendency to pop up, and how to deal with different disciplinary issues. All the distractions that happen with the team, you know, throughout the course of a year. They ended up winning their conference, obviously, and progressed through the nationals to this point. I also worked with one of the individual team players. He was struggling with his confidence level. He's a senior this year, actually, and was able to work with him also on a weekly basis. Throughout the year, actually I have a very nice testimonial from him that I just posted on my website a couple of weeks ago, actually, that thanking me for the help that I've provided him. So
great.
It's been really exciting, really fulfilling, actually.
Yeah. So where are the championships going to be?
In Louisville, Kentucky.
Okay.
Bellingame University.
Oh, yeah. I think I've been there before, a long time ago. Yeah. Are you going to be there as their sports psychology consultant or mental training coach? Or?
Yeah, I'll be available for them. I'll get there on – the first game is on Thursday, and I'll get there on Tuesday and be available to them for Wednesday and earlier Thursday, and I think I'll have a chance to give the pregame speech as well. So looking forward to all of that.
Yeah, congratulations. Yeah. I'll put that. I can post that on the Performing Edge Coach website if that's okay. Too, your results. I mean, you're just that. Is that okay that I mentioned?
Absolutely.
I've been working with them. The Division II soccer team, is that a particular college?
It's Colorado State Mesa University in Grand Junction, Colorado.
Okay. Yeah. Do you happen to have a photo at all of the team or you with the team?
I don't have one with me with the team. I have a team picture that I could send you.
Okay, that'd be great. I appreciate that, yeah. We could post that there. And I think that helps motivate everyone, all our coaches, to see that these techniques really work and that we're out there doing our job. And that's exciting. So do you want to share, Greg, what do you think has, in terms of team tactics, what you've done that's really worked well to get them to this point so far?
The feedback that I'm getting from all of my teams, actually, is the communication piece is really the foundation of what I teach and what seems to be the piece that helps them start to develop trust and confidence in each other. And then once we establish those open lines of communication, and I have a little organizational chart, if you will, that we try to implement as far as how we funnel communication from, you know, a soccer coach, for example, has 30 to 32 players and trying to, you know, funnel all of the communication required to the head coach is a challenge. So we start there, develop these channels of communication through a series of or a level of course, assistant coaches, and then a level of team captains. And we get that established, and the next piece is to create goals and objectives for each individual player as well as the team. We also try to create a purpose for the team, you know, something outside of just winning the national championship, you know, what, why do we play the game type thing. So we have conversations along those lines to try and establish that early on in the season. And then, of course, the visualization piece is another workshop that I use and train with them that first week of the season to help them implement their goals, number one, and try and build up their mental fitness as well as their physical fitness. So we do that early in the season as well, and that's kind of an ongoing process for whoever wants that help throughout the year. You know, I'm certainly available to do stuff over the phone or, as you taught us to do, create the MP3s and send those as well of different visualizations. That's worked really well with that one individual I worked with. I sent him an MP3 now and then to help get him past certain mental blocks that he was facing. So, it's, like I say, kind of a process that, you know, I've been able to work with them throughout the year, which has been, like I said, very fulfilling.
Yeah, that's fantastic. And do you give a talk for the whole group then, different presentations, or take the whole group through exercises?
Yeah, I do. I did three different presentations throughout over a four-day period. They last about 2 to 3 hours apiece. And along those, you know, number one, communication, number two, goal setting, and then the third piece is visualization. excuse me. And then just give them training on that in the beginning of the season. And then, like I say, it just kind of progresses from there. You know, every team's a little bit different. Individuals are different, so just kind of evolved from that point.
Yeah, right.
It's all about building relationships.
Right, exactly, yeah. And when you're going to Colorado, I mean to this the NCAA championships, mm-hmm. How would your role change there be, or would you, what kind of things would you do there, do you think?
Actually, I'm going to use the idea that I think it was John last week talked about the four C's. I kind of adapted that, I guess I should say, to the primary C being confidence. I mean, I think, especially when you get to this level of a national championship, you know, whether it be at a collegiate level or professional level, all of the teams, when you get to the Final Four, I would say talent-wise, they're probably all equal, meaning that at any given day, you know, one team could beat another. You know, if you had a round-robin tournament, for example, I would say that, you know, each team would be able to beat the other on any given day. The difference, I think, for me anyway, having watched, you know, sports for so many years and participated for so many years, it seems like the team that is most mentally fit, most mentally prepared, has the highest level of confidence on that particular day is the one that usually wins. And so I'm going to kind of walk them through that process of the three C's to create the C of confidence, if you will, the commitment, and what does that mean? Concentration opposed to challenge. I like concentration a little bit better than the challenge piece. And then control, you know, the mental discipline to avoid the distractions that are certainly going to pop up prior to the game as well as during the game. So we're going to talk about those things and how they're going to affect each individual and there again, just how to manage each one, because that's going to culminate into developing their highest level of confidence that's going to be required to participate at that level.
Yeah. Great.
Looking forward to that.
Right. Yeah, that's great that you could use that we can share techniques like this with our different coaches, and like John Cannon mentioned last time that you could use his idea of the four C's, confidence, commitment, concentration, and control, right?
Those are the C's I'm going to use, yeah.
Yeah, and that it could be any C's that you come up with for any of us. Be able to, I think, if you can come up with something that where something begins with all the same letter, then it's easier to remember, like the three P's that I came up with
right.
your performing edge, and there's certainly lots of other acronyms like that you can come up with. So, that's fantastic. So when is that, the NCAAs?
Yeah, next, their first game is next Thursday. So I'll be there, like I say, I'll fly in on Tuesday and be available to them on Wednesday.
Uh-huh. Great. Well, so you can report back to us if you like, how it goes in the next call and email me kind of thing if you'd like.
Okay.
Yeah. That'd be great. Yeah. So congratulations, Greg. That's great.
Thank you.
Yeah. And, Amy or Michelle, do you have anything you want to share or questions about what you're doing?
Hi, Dr. Joan. It's Michelle.
Yeah.
So I've been working with, continuing to work with a couple surfers in Bali, which has been going well.
Uh-huh.
And recently a master's runner and mountain biker. And I've been doing a lot of writing for just local publications, and there's this one sporting magazine that is a national publication in Canada, and they've asked me to be a contributing writer in a section they're going to create under sports psychology, so that's kind of fun.
Yeah.
I'm amazed at how receptive people are to sports psychology up here. Like, it's just everyone's really interested in it and fascinated and open to it, and it's really kind of easy just to get yourself in the door, I've noticed.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
That's great. Yeah.
So anyway, that's what's going on with me.
How are you getting yourself in the door kind of thing?
Well, I'll
share with other people?
Just basically through the, I'll attach an article that I'd written and, with my website, and it just, I find that that's really helping with credibility. And then just introduce myself, tell them what I'm doing, and 100% of the time they'll email back and want to have a meeting.
Great.
So I find the writing really helps if they can see something that you've written on a specific topic. And, you know, I've taken your advice and, like, I wrote an article on performance anxiety and practical tips towards overcoming it and stuff that they could use today, now, that they can apply. And it's been really helpful.
Yeah. Wow, that's fantastic. It's really good to hear what you're doing, Michelle, and how you're finding that people are really receptive to sports psychology. Yeah, that it's easy to get in the door. And I love how you said 100% of the time people call back and want to have a meeting with you. So
yeah.
I mean, that's if you think of the average sort of marketing person or salesperson, they'd probably say that, you know, only 10 or 20% of the time they would get someone calling back. But for you to say 100% of the time they're calling back, it shows there's really a market out there for this, right?
Yeah, well, you know, I'm pretty much doing what you said we should be doing, but we'll see if it translates into business. It's one thing to get in the door, but it's another, you know, to get a client.
Yeah, exactly.
So, but I'll report back on that one, let you know how it goes.
Okay, great. And I think you're really doing the right thing to always give some content, not just the marketing part of here's what I can do for you, but to actually, yeah, show them an article, tips. You know, you want to be kind of educating them all along the way, giving them samples of what you do and giving them, you know, content and actionable steps that they can take, whether or not they engage you as a, as a coach. That way they feel like you're really a giving, sharing person, and you're demonstrating your knowledge so that they feel like they can get a sample of what you do before making a decision about whether they want to hire you, kind of thing.
Yeah.
So that's great, yeah.
I don't think there are a lot of people doing this in Vancouver.
Uh-huh.
Which makes it easier for me. I actually had the province newspaper call me, which is a sports news. It's primarily there for their sports section in Vancouver, and they called me. They said, "You're a sports psychologist, right?" And I said, "No, I'm a sports psychology coach." "Oh, well, that's all the same thing. No matter. Can you give us a comment on such and such?"
Yeah, great.
Like they didn't even care, you know. It's just. So I think we're very few and far between in this neck of the woods, so I'm lucky.
Yeah, that's fantastic. So that's good to have you report that experience, that people don't necessarily ask where you've been to school or what your degrees are or what your credentials are. If there's a need there, there is. Yeah, and you demonstrate that you have knowledge in the area and you have a passion for it and experience to really know how to help them, then... yeah, they don't care what your title is. Same thing as sports psychologist. It's better to, you know, if you have a PhD, to call yourself a sports psychologist, but just call yourself, a sports psychology coach or sports psychology consultant or expert is just fine, or a mental training coach or performance coach, or, you know, that you have your certification through this program, Performing Edge Coaching International. You know, all those things can help, I think. So that's great, yeah. And I just wanted to, so thank you, Michelle, for sharing that, yeah. And, Greg, I just wanted to ask you also, are you with the soccer, are you hired then? Are you being paid to do that work with the soccer team?
I volunteered for this piece, the first piece that I got paid for, the preseason stuff, but because of their, you know, the potential benefit for me as well as them, you know, in the Nationals. Anyway, I volunteered for this piece.
Yeah. Great. Yeah, fantastic. So that's good to know. I know Amy has done a lot of really good work, too, with teams. Amy, are you there? Do you want to report in what you're doing?
Yeah. I don't have a whole lot going on with teams right now. I just finished the tennis season.
But individuals are fine, too.
Yeah. And I've got some clients from the Pennsylvania Ballet, and I'm kind of gearing up for a big workshop that I'm going to be doing there in early January with all the parents of the school and the kids, and also working with the artistic director on what we're going to plan for the company. So, you know, that's sort of my focus right now. I also am going to be contacting some of these other college coaches from the teams, you know, that I did last year in this area, like Penn and Haverford College and St. Joe's, and see if I can get in and do some more work with some of those teams. So it's a good time to be contacting coaches after the holidays and before their season starts at the end of February to see if I can do some preseason things with them.
So yeah,
that's a
good
game
point, Amy. I'm glad you
shared
that. Yeah, too. The timing is good. So would you contact them during this time or after Christmas?
I'm going to send some emails out in the next couple weeks, because it is true, these coaches, you cannot contact them in the middle of the season. They're crazy. There's just too much going on, and they don't want it. They can't focus on anything. So you really have to catch them off season.
Yeah.
So a very good time would be when they get back to school in January, but before the end of the season, before they start at the end of February. That's usually when they start. So,
uh-huh.
So to be contacting them now would make sense. So that's the game plan for me for now.
Yeah. That's great. Yeah, if you send them an email now, then you can set up a meeting. Yeah,
mm-hmm.
with them kind of thing. Yeah, by sometimes coaches have extra time during, you know, right after the school finishes and during the holidays, if they're still there, or you can have a meeting by phone if they have some off time. Yeah, or that first week in January kind of thing. Yeah, so that's good.
Yeah, I think this is a good time now to be sending the emails out.
Yeah, so that's good for everyone to know.
Sorry, Amy, this is Alex.
Alex, how are you?
Good, how are you?
Sorry, I didn't know you joined us.
Yeah,
great.
Amy, so I'm sorry, I guess I missed something. What coaches are you reaching out now before the season begins?
Some of the college coaches, because like the tennis teams start gearing up. I think their practices start at the end of February for their spring season.
Oh, the spring season.
And that's what I did last year. I did a couple of workshops I did lacrosse and I did tennis. So it's a slow process, all this emailing back and forth. Some of the coaches are very receptive. They get back to you right away, but some don't. And I find that it's one of the best times to approach them and say, hey, you know, let's really get them geared up for the season that's going to start. We can, you know, do a couple of workshops or do something to get them ready mentally for the season. That's what I did last year, and it worked well.
Yeah, I did something very similar. I have contacted the squash coach for Yale. I'll be giving a couple of workshops in the summer 2015, just to give you an idea. Unbelievable. And also another golf coach also doing something very similar, working for the spring and summer 2015. So you're right. I mean, some of these coaches have
reach
out way ahead of time, particularly here on the East Coast. Golf is pretty much out until April.
Right.
So not much can do until then.
But squash would be a good time.
Yeah, that's what I do now. I'm reaching out to a lot of squash coaches. I'm reaching out to colleges, universities, clubs, schools, all in this area. So that's a lot of fun.
Are you in New York?
Just north, about half an hour north. Yeah.
Okay.
So.
Yeah.
Some of these schools, like one... at University of Pennsylvania, for instance, which is an Ivy League school in Philadelphia, the tennis coach was very receptive to me, and she really liked my background in tennis, and she invited me to come and do something with the team, and it went really well, and then she wanted me to make it ongoing. But we had a little problem, and one of the problems was, and I think each school is different, but when you're working with some of the big schools like Penn, they pay sports, they have a sports psychologist that works with all their teams, and they have someone, his name is Dr. Joel Fish, and he's the biggest sports psychologist in this area. So he is the sports psychologist for all the teams. So this coach had to go to the administration and say, I would really like to put this in my budget for next year, having me come in. And they basically said to her, well, unless you're having a problem with him, is there some reason why he can't, you know, work with your team? And obviously he's incredibly competent. You know, it's not like, he can't work with my team. So that's what I found, you know, depending on what they already have in place. Sometimes they have things in place, but then at some of the smaller schools, they don't have somebody like that, so they're more approachable.
Yeah, this something very similar happened to me. There's a university called Fordham University.
Oh, right. Yeah, I know that.
And I went to Fordham for my master's, but I reached out to the college level. And they told me this exactly the same thing. They have somebody else in-house, a person who reaches out is the sports psychologist, for the teams. Okay, I mean, just to be aware, I mean, it's impossible to be one sports psychologist for
I don't know,
44 teams times 20 athletes. You cannot be sports psychologist for, 400 people. Impossible. So my angle here is I know the coach for the squash team. So my next step is reach out to him and see if I can just do some pro bono talks to the players and somehow find my way to squeeze in and maybe not this season, but maybe next season have a stronger say. I also do talks with the idea of putting my name out, because that may lead to other leads or reaching out to other people. Or there is one wonderful program here around in New York called City Squash, which basically provides education support to very needy schools in the area, in the Bronx, in exchange of picking up and playing squash. So what I did is I provided a couple of talks to these young players, ages from 12 to 18, and I have gone to a couple of times to tournaments where they participate, because I hang around and I'm with them and support them and cheer them and give them some hints here there what to do or not to do. They feel like I'm invested in the best of city squash. So then I use this little leverage I have for my own benefit and say, hey, by the way, do you happen to know somebody in the school XYZ that has a squash coach? I say, oh, yeah, by the way, we know them. Okay, great. So indirectly, that led me to contacting other coaches that would have been very difficult for me to reach out to. So there's a lot of paving, a lot of work, underground work that I find myself having to do if I really want to reach out and spread the network of people that I need to contact and I reach out to more people and I have my name spread around. So unless I have some other ways of that I don't know yet, that's the way I've been using, kind of a slow, kind of snail approach. But I don't have any other way of speeding this process unless you, Dr. Chauvin, have something in your sleeve you can share with us.
I think, you know, if you have, yeah, it's great, Alex. Thanks for sharing all of that and the City Squash program. And it's great that you guys can share the process of getting your name out there and getting in the door and getting out there. And I think it's a combination of online and offline techniques, I think. And if you giving talks is fantastic, but always have some kind of follow-up. I have a, like if you can have a handout of like top 10 tips that apply, and then you can customize it. This is one idea I've had that, you know, I've had this handout for a long time, like top 10 your performing edge tips. I'll put that in our email here. It's emailed to you. I'm just putting
okay.
that down here now to send that all to you. My as an example of my top 10 tips that you could use, or customize it or create your own. And it could be you could do a general one, top 10 tips of just mental training or your performing edge, and then you could also customize it, top 10 mental training squash tips, top 10 mental tennis tips, you know, and just change a few of the words in each of the tips to make it specific for that sport. That way when you hand it to the coaches or you email it to them, then they think, oh, this is customized for this sport, and I can use it for their athletes. And when I found that the top 10 tips idea, it really gets that handout gets around all over the place, and people just tend to make copies of it and hand it to their athletes and other coaches. And so, and you always, of course, have your contact information, your website on the, I put it on the top and the bottom, the, you know, your website, so people have access to it right away. And then you email it to people as well. Do the offline technique of handouts, and then online as well with having it on your website and emailing too. And that way it almost becomes like a reference for everyone to look at there. And it gives immediate, showing of your expertise and your positioning yourself as the expert in that area. So that's, and then you always hand that out at the as part of your talks too, and people seem to love that because it's easy, kind of bite-sized pieces of information, and it and if you're working with a team, it could be top 10 team. Team squash or team soccer tips. It could work for individuals or teams. But that's one thing that you could do to have this kind of a tool, and it seems to kind of go viral with always having your name and your website on there, so people can get back to you, and then you can refer to that as. Then when you give a talk or something, you can, that makes it easy to give a talk as well. You can go through the top 10 tips and extrapolate on each one and give do a little exercise on each one as well. Does that kind of make sense? Is that helpful?
So to reach out to the coaches and meet them personally, a handout, give out this handout?
Yeah, I'd say a combination of both. Yeah, give them the handout. If they have a number of coaches there, you might bring 10 or 20 copies kind of thing, and then they will tend to hand them out to the other coaches, people of influence or athletic directors, that kind of thing. And then, but combination of online and offline techniques, so I'd say hand it to them. But then when you're online, go ahead and say, I'll also email this to you, so that when they have it in their computer, then they've got, the link, a link to your website, they can get back to you really quickly. And so that way it doesn't get lost. When they run out of handouts, they might not hand out as more. A lot of people make copies themselves, which is great, but things can happen even faster get on the Internet with people clicking on your link, too.
So on the website, you have the top 10 tips for sport X, and it has its own link.
Its own what? That link? Oh yeah, I would say just put it. You could have a regular blog, your website, and have one of the entries or one of the articles on your website be the top 10 tips.
Okay.
And then at the top and bottom, put a link. To your, say, coaching page, so that people know where you're coaching, how to get in touch with you, and what do you do when you work with teams or individuals.
on there. So, you know, put links. You can put lots of links on there as well to various places on your website, to the different things that you do, a link to your, you know, bio page, your about page, it's called, so they get your background too. And so if you have a video of you talking or interviewing someone, or a video testimonial from one of your athletes, you can, you know, link to that as well. That's really powerful. So, yeah, so all of that works well. I think that, you know, you can take the top 10 tips and then put it in many formats, you know, handout, and then also you know, on your website, put the actual article there, and then also you know, have it as a PDF or Word document and email, so you can email it to them. So don't just stick to one format, but, you know, put it out there in many different ways. And then you could also make it into a video or audio and just talk about the top 10 tips and have a little audio on your website. Or you know, many of you have done the Google Hangouts interview with me, so you know how to do Google Hangouts, which is free. And so you can just make your own little video there, just talking about the – I would say don't with videos, you want to make them very short, because people tend to only watch a video for about 2 minutes. So maybe do top three tips on the first video, and then next three tips the next video, and next three or four tips on the third video. So that way it keeps them coming back. And then when you do one of those Google Hangout videos, then it goes right onto your YouTube channel. You can just create – it's easy to create a YouTube channel there, and then you can just put it right on your website. So if people can see you through a video, that works really well. They get to know you faster. Does that kind of make sense?
Okay.
Yeah. So, yeah, that's great. So thanks, all of you guys, for sharing all those great tips, Greg and Michelle and Amy and Alex. And is there anyone else new that's joined us, too? I haven't heard any other dings, but is there anybody else? I just wanted to... also talk about some exercises that you could do. One thing that I mentioned at the beginning, for those of you who just joined us, good news is Annie and Fernando, who are going through the certification program. They're in Mexico City, and they just were at the Central American Games. They were appointed to be the mental training coaches, sports psychology coaches for Mexico City. There for the Central American Games for the equestrian team in dressage, and they just reported back that just this last week on Tuesday, their athletes got the team gold medal, the individual gold medal, and a bronze individual medal. So in dressage in the equestrian area, so it was really exciting, even in spite of all of the challenging dynamics that they had with because most of the people on the team are ex-husbands and ex-wives, so it's very difficult with you know, there was a lot of fighting going on, and they had to frame it so that tell people that we're not here to just be friends, but we're here to, we know that you have your own background stories. We're here to focus on our best, to get our best performance possible for Mexico. And so one of the exercises that they did, a sort of team building exercise, was they got the team together, you know, six riders, and had them doing, you know, something other than riding. That's one of the ideas of team building, is doing something other than what they're used to doing, so that you get them to work as a team. And so you had all these, you know, six people together, and they gave them a wood stick, a very large, thin, light stick. It's just a, you know, kind of a long stick, like a dowel or something. And you put all the team members put their finger, just the tip of their fingers, on the bottom of the stick, so that you can imagine the stick is up in the air, and everyone is underneath it, holding the stick up with their fingers, and everybody needs to have their fingers, both their hands, on the stick, and the goal is to make the stick go down. Slowly make it go down, and you can imagine them all standing up, and they're very close to each other, so they have to work closely together, work as a team, and they need to be in sync with each other in order for this to happen. And at first, you know, they're not in sync, and so the stick is actually going up instead of down, because some people are pressing harder up than down, and it got that, and they were laughing.
you know, it just got them laughing because they're just feeling like, oh, geez, we're a real klutz with this, or we're not working together. And then, of course, they're all, it was a really great experience because they were trying to, I mean, whether or not they achieved that goal is not as important as just the working together and the experience together and just working as a team and being able to have fun together and laugh together so it would loosen things up and break the ice. So because everybody needs to be in sync to make it go in one direction. Everybody has to apply like the same pressure with their hands to make it go down. And the rule is with that game, it's all or team building exercises that, you know, everyone's in contact with the stick. But if you're not in tune with each other, then, you know, one, then, you know, it's going to go up in some parts and down in the other. So everybody needs to be relaxed and be in the same mode. And so, you know, and then getting the team to do that, they're all having to work really in a close proximity to the other. They're all, you know, standing in a line under the stick. So it was a really, here's this, you know, these team members that are at the top of their game in, you know, in equestrian area, but now they're doing something that's completely different, but we're still working as a team. And it was really effective. They said that it got them, you know, working together, and laughing, loosening up, and so they all had this common experience. Now they're all, you know, equally bad at this particular task, and realizing, oh, geez, we need to, you know, work on getting in sync here. And it just was a really effective way. This is like in the middle, right at the beginning of the, before the Central American Games, when they're all there ready to compete in, you know, the biggest event of their lives. So it was a great way to get them to just do something different and have, and it actually brought the team together, they said, and of course it's not going to mend all the emotional wounds of the past of them being ex-husbands and ex-wives, but it could help them to work together in the short term there and just to have a fun experience, a feeling of feeling good about each other. So that was one exercise that I wanted to share with you, with them. And what happened there, hopefully they can join us maybe for the next call to talk more about their experience here in Mexico. But they said that the horses that they brought from the other teams, Colombia and Venezuela and Puerto Rico, brought these huge, gorgeous horses. They were working they were actually training in the U.S., and they had access to these beautiful horses, whereas Mexico had brought these horses. They looked like ponies compared to the other riders, so they were very intimidated. But they said, you know, look, we need to focus on what we do have, you know, just focus on our abilities, and we can work with anything we've got, any horses. So it worked out really well, and they actually, you know, in spite of all that, the challenging team dynamics and not having great as good of horses, they still were able to get the gold medal in team and individual. And one thing that they mentioned was that the last rider, they said that Colombia was ahead of them by just one point toward the end, and that they did a visualization at a critical moment with one guy who had the lowest score, and that they needed to bring him up in his team scoring to be able to really help the team. And so they did a visualization with him right before the last competition there, to help him to just be smooth and ride well, and not think of the process and not the results, and just to be in sync with your horse and just to relax. And they did that the night before, and then he competed and he got results immediately. And the next day, he came in first
he came in first place in his competition. His score went up by 2.5 points the next day, and now his score was counting, was on, you know, it's a complicated scoring system that we don't need to go into, but it was, his score was significant and really helped the team. And they got the 2 points that they needed for the gold medal for the team. So that was an example of how sometimes you can be really critical, you know, with picking out the right team member that needs the most help, maybe somebody who's struggling the most or who has the lowest score. And right in the midst of a competition, you could actually have them do you know, do a visualization and give them extra help, and then they can actually turn out to be the critical person that really brings the team up in their, you know, with the scoring, if they feel like they can get this visualization help. So it helps to, you know, do the mental preparation, of course, several weeks and months before a competition. That's really the best way overall. But then when you get to the middle of a major competition, it's you can still continue to use these powerful mental training techniques right there. Once you build a relationship with these athletes, then they look to you for guidance and for help at those critical moments. And you can you know, listen to what they're struggling with and then create a visualization or mental training exercise that is exactly what they need for that moment. They, you know, they really can look to you as a source, as a resource for doing their absolute best. One example of that too, I was going to mention, Greg, you're going to the NCAAs, right, with your soccer team, and Amy with your teams, and all of you, Alex and Michelle, that. One of the things that they mentioned in Mexico, Annie and Fernando, was that they were, as they were there, you know, training the athletes and working with them with calmness and meditation, visualization exercises, that they became an anchor for the athletes for relaxation. And just as they're standing around and there's all this tension between the team players, they would mention that one woman said, you know, you are an anchor for me for relaxation. So she would say, every time, Fernando, I walk by you, I remember to breathe. So that's another thing, you don't realize that you can play very many different roles as a mental training coach, and you could be actually there as an anchor, you know, and a reminder to when you relax, because you're teaching all of these techniques, and then right when they're right out there, in this case in the arena training, they're able to, you know, and all the tensions going on, if you're there, then you can be, just your presence there can be an anchor and remind people to relax and take those deep breaths, and they'll oftentimes come to you and depend on you for those critical moments when they might need a, like this one woman said, I need a session now. You know, kind of I'm very, you know, tense, and she just needed kind of an emergency visualization or sports psychology session. So they were able to do that kind of on the fly as needed with people in the middle. And then at one point there's two separate arenas there, and she said that there was something going wrong in the second arena with the second half of the team there, and the woman in the first arena said to Fernando, the coach, our mental training coach, said, Fernando, stand there, just stand right there. She said, you're an anchor for me. And he said because there was all this conflict going on in the other arena that she could see, she wanted Fernando to just stand there and be, he was like an energy barrier to be able to keep her focus on what she was doing and keep from getting distracted from what was going on in the other arena. So those are some examples of different ways that you could use yourself as a mental training coach, and that you can actually have different roles that you play. So So those are some of the, and then lots of different exercises that we could do, that you could do as well, that I wanted to mention. Anybody have any comments about what we've been talking about so far?
Dr. Joanne?
Yeah.
Sorry, my call cut out there, and when you were talking about your Mexican coaches, what they were doing with the team building with the stick.
Uh-huh.
Can you just tell me again how, like, they were holding, what was it, like a piece of doweling with one finger? I didn't quite get that.
Yeah, so it was a wood stick, a very large, just a thin, light stick that's long, where, let's say if you had six team, in this case they had six team members, and they all were standing up and all putting their fingers underneath at the bottom, underneath the stick. So if you can visualize this long stick that is, maybe 10 feet long or so, it could be any length that you need, that's light, and it could be any kind of stick, just as long as it's kind of long and light. And the idea is that everyone would be underneath the stick. So it's the stick is up in the air, and it's parallel to the ground. And all the team members stand underneath it and put their fingers on the bottom of the stick. And the goal is to make the stick slowly go down, which means everybody's got to kind of slowly bring it down, everybody has to have the same amount of pressure on the stick to make it come down. And but in their case, the stick was going up in some places because everyone wasn't in sync with each other. You want to have everybody kind of coming down, like gradually bending their knees and, slowly and putting the same amount of pressure on the stick. But, it's tough to do. And so because you need to be in sync, everybody, for it to go in one direction. Some people were pushing more on one side up. Some people, pushing less on, the other side. And so you need to be relaxed, be in the same mode. And so if you're not in tune with each other, then it doesn't happen. But the great thing that did happen was that everyone was so close to each other there, and they were all just started laughing. And that was the whole point of the exercises, to just get them to try to do this exercise. Whether they accomplish it or not is not as important as just the experience of working together, and that they were laughing and enjoying and realizing, hey, this is really tough to do, and we're really bad at this. it's giving them something to do other than their normal experience of riding, and they're working in very close proximity. So it's just an exercise to help with group cohesion, and to see if they, and sometimes it'll really work where they can actually all bring the stick down, at least a foot or so, so they can see that, hey, we're all working as a team here. Does that kind of make sense?
This is not a round stick, right? Clearly.
It could be a round stick, but if you had a one that's just flat, that would be better, probably.
Yeah. So you can just touch it, but you cannot hold it, of course. So
yeah, right. They can't hold it, just have their fingers on the bottom of it. So it'd be a while. I guess you need something that's, an inch wide or something like that, or it could be
The tip of the fingers?
Yeah, tip of the fingers kind of thing.
Okay.
Yeah, because if you hold it, that'd be like too easy.
That's right, easy. Yeah,
yeah, and they could manipulate it too easily. So the idea is just to have the tips of the fingers pushing it up. So, yeah, you want a stick that's maybe an inch or inch and a half wide, or something that's just real light, a real light stick. Yeah, so it's a fun kind of exercise that they were able to do. They were going to send me a picture of it, hopefully, too. Hopefully I can get that, and then I can put that on the website there, too. So, yeah, the wood stick exercise. And that was something that was a really critical moment for the whole team, where they were fighting before that on the third day, and then they did this exercise, and it just really loosened things up and allowed people to laugh and work together
and have fun, and they it just really kept loosened up the tension so that they could all just enjoy, realize that, hey, you know, it's this is we're a team here, you know, we're just, and we're trying to work together doing this thing. So it just brought a better relationship between the team members.
Yeah, that's great.
So does that make sense?
Yes.
Yeah, Michelle,
yes,
did you get
thanks.
That?
Got it, thanks.
Yeah, so you could just get a stick, you know, go to a hardware store and get any kind of stick like that. It would work.
I actually, when it cut out, I thought you wanted, the stick was vertical, and I thought, okay, this is not making sense. Now it makes sense.
I should have, yeah, I'm sorry, I should have said right away horizontal, yeah.
Yeah.
To the ground, yeah.
Thanks for that, Dr. Joanne.
Yeah. So that's one exercise that you could do. And then, you know, the idea with team building activities in general for sports is that one of the problems is people just kind of sometimes do team building things without any, or exercises without any real thought or goal in mind. And so if you do something without really thinking it through, then it is not as helpful. But if you can, team building activities, they can really be a powerful way to unite a group and to develop strengths and to address weaknesses if the exercise is kind of planned out carefully and strategically, like this wood stick kind of thing. In that case, you don't have to do a lot of introduction. You just put the stick up there and say the goal is to make it come down slowly and see how you can do. And then sometimes you can just talk about it afterward, which is really helpful, I think. And so the real purpose, needs to be a real purpose behind your decision to do some kind of an exercise, for example, improving the team's problem-solving skills or creativity skills, rather than just because you want to share an exercise. So if you can think about what it is that you want to improve, and the purpose of the exercise, and describe that ahead of time, then that can really help the team to give them, kind of frame them why this is important, what the purpose of it is, and that way that will help the team to get behind doing the exercise. And this applies to individuals too, you know, just showing what the purpose is. One important step when you're planning any kind of team building activity too is it comes at the very beginning. You start by figuring out, well, what challenges does the team have? And then you can choose an exercise that will be effective in helping them with this. So spend some time thinking about your team or your athlete's current strengths and weaknesses. And then here's some questions that you could ask to sort of identify the source of those problems. You could ask yourself, okay, so do the team members need to get to know one another? Is this a new team? Do they need to build relationships with each other better? Like Greg, you were saying, communication is so important. Ask yourself, are there conflicts between certain people that are creating divisions within the team? Some other questions, and these are kind of the kinds of things that group exercises could help with. And do the members focus on their own success and harm the group as a result? I think, Greg, we talked about that last time with saying that oftentimes there can be one team member that's the real talent or the star that thinks it's working for their own success and maybe harming the group, so that could be an issue sometimes. Do people need to learn how to work together instead of individually? So that team exercises can help with that. Is there poor communication that slows down the group process? So in that case, exercises that help with communication can really make a difference.
Dr. Joanne, are you familiar with any source or resource that we can have that explain different type of exercises for teams? that lead with these particular issues?
Well, let's see. Most of this information I developed myself.
Okay.
But I will I'll email you those questions that I'm talking about now.
Okay. Great.
And this information that I'm giving you now, I can just email you in an article.
Yeah.
And there is a book that I have that's really good. It's called Playing Along. It's a good resource. The title of the book is Playing Along, 37 Group Learning Activities. And the author is Izzy Gesell. It's spelled G-E-S, as in Sam, E-L-L. So Izzy is, I know it's kind of a funny first name, Izzy, I-Z-Z-Y, and last name is Gesell, G, and then E-S, as in Sam, E-L-L. Izzy Gesell is the author, and the title again is Playing Along, 37 Group Learning Activities. So, so that's a good book that's, I think, available on Amazon for group learning activities. They could apply to sports, as well as team building for businesses, and you could take those exercises too, and any of them, and some work with individuals as well. Sometimes, if you're working with a group of coaches, that they might want to, you could work with these sorts of activities as well. So that did you get that title? Okay.
Sam Cassell.
The name?
Yes.
Yeah, it was, the title of the book is Playing Along, and then it's Izzy Gesell, G-E-S-E-L-L.
G-O.
G-E, and then S, this is Sam, E-L-L is the last name. And the first name is Izzy, I-S-S-Y.
Oh, Gesell.
Gesell, yeah. So, yeah, and he has a lot of sorts of learning exercises like that. So some other questions you might want to ask people are, do people need to learn how to work together instead of individually? Because oftentimes people have a sort of individual mindset, and you want to help them to work together. So group exercises can help with that. And also to ask them, does the group need a boost to their morale or their motivation? Sometimes if a team is on a losing streak, they're not working together and the morale is low. So exercises can help with that. And then are some members resistant to change, and does this affect the group's ability to move forward? So if they're... some members aren't, kind of in their own little faction and not wanting to change, then that can affect the group. So, so those are some things you can ask yourself about what's going on, what problems do we need to solve within the group. And then, you can get different exercises that use exercises that might address those problems. So, another example of a team building exercise, one for improving communication, it's a back to back drawing exercise. So it would divide your group into pairs. Each person, there's A's and B's, and so each group gets with a pair. It's helpful if you can have people pair up with someone they don't know or don't work with as closely. That way they can kind of learn to get to know other people in the group. And so you divide the group into pairs and then have each pair sit on the floor back to back. So imagine they're on the floor. They're not looking at each other, but they're looking away. They're sitting back to back. And then you give one person in each pair a shape. It could be a shape of a cow or a star, anything, a simple shape. You give them a picture of that shape, and then you give the other person a pencil and pad of paper. And then ask the person holding the picture to give verbal instructions to
to their partner on how to draw the shape without actually telling them what the shape is. So, you know, this is a good exercise in communication, improving that. So, you know, you can't say it's a cow or it's a star, but say, you know, draw a line, you know, out, you know, straight up and then straight down. The person has to try to find the language to describe how to draw the shape without actually saying what the shape is. And then after they've finished, you ask each pair to compare the original shape with their actual drawing. So, and then you can ask them these kind of questions like, okay, how did it go? How did the first person describe the shape? You know, was it... Were they using words that were helpful? Was the communication good? And then how did the second person, you know, interpret those instructions? How did they listen? How did they get that language? And were there problems in sending, you know, both the sending and the receiving parts of the process? So that's a good exercise for communication where you have to describe, you know, use words to describe something, but you can't actually see what it is. That's called the sort of back-to-back drawing exercise. So these are some things that I've come up with. You know, they're a combination of things that I've come up with or used and things I've learned in various trainings and all, too. So if you can come up with exercises, also the exercises in the book, the Your Performing Edge book, are the things that individuals can do, that you can turn them into group exercises just by, you know, taking that exercise, dividing a group into pairs, again, and having each person do the exercise, and then share with the other person what their...
What page is that, Dr. Joanne?
What's that?
In what page is that, the exercise?
Oh, well, the back-to-back drawing I just made, that's not on, in the book. It's just one that I have myself. It's not on any particular page. I just designed that, so I'm just telling you that one.
Okay.
But I'll email that to you also here.
Okay.
But I'm just saying that in general, with the Your Performing Edge book that you all have,
mm-hmm.
You can... If you take any exercise in the book, at the end of every chapter, or most of the chapters, there's a little gray box, you know, that describes a mental training exercise. So there's 26 chapters there, and for most of them, there's a little gray box at the end of every chapter, which gives exercises to do. And so I'm saying you can go to any chapter, you know, just depending on what topic that you want to cover or what problem you want to solve with your athletes. If you go to that particular, select the chapter for that topic, let's say you want to deal with understanding performance anxiety or something, then you'd go to like the chapter 13 in your Performing Edge book, go to understanding performance anxiety, which is on page 129.
Okay.
And then you'd look at the end of the chapter there, and at the end of the chapter there is the exercise on page 135, exercise on rechanneling nervous energy during a competition. So we talk about four things there: breathing deeply, and then accepting nervousness as your friend, and reminding yourself that you're well prepared, and then the fourth step is mentally rehearsing the event. So you could have each person, you know, divide your group, turn it into a group exercise by dividing the group into pairs and doing each of those exercises, telling them, okay, number one, I want you to breathe deeply and take them through that exercise, and then all four steps here, like the mentally rehearsing the event, and write down your experience of that, and then turn to your partner and share that experience. What did you learn? How did it go? What problems did you have? What images did you come up with? And then just be able to share, have them each share back and forth what their experience is, and then you could have them report back to the whole group what was the learning, the main learning from those from that experience. So you can do that as a group with any exercise where you basically pair up and each person does the experience themselves, shares it with their partner, and then the third step is having a report back to the group gain, you know, knowledge from all the different pairs. What are the best techniques and learning? So that kind of makes sense. So that gives give you a lot more exercises to do too in the Your Performing Edge book. There, use it as resource for individuals and for groups. So yeah, great. I think we're so next time. Why don't we go around the group and just say if you can kind of summarize any one or two nuggets that you learned today, anything that was most helpful to you, so that we can have that on the, so other people can learn from that too. That would be great. And then we're going to meet the next time on December the 11th at that Thursday at 9, same time, 9 o'clock Pacific time. So yeah, what was... or do you guys have any questions that have come up or any comments from what we've talked about here?
Oh, Dr. Joanne, just with regards to Alex's question with team building exercises, the LiveStrong website also has some good exercises on there, Alex, if you want to look at that.
Who is this, Michelle?
LiveStrong.com.
LiveStrong?
Yeah, so Live is like L-I-V-E and then Strong, S-T-R-O-N-G.
Okay. .com. All right.
Yeah, thank you, Michelle. That's good.
Thanks.
There's some good exercises.
Despite the affiliation with Lance, still good.
Yes, I thought.
Yeah. I think he used to be affiliated there, and then they kicked him out.
Yeah.
But it's still a good website and good organization.
Joanne, have you used these exercises both in business and with sport teams?
Yes, Yeah, it works really well with business, too. Yeah, just the same kind of thing, because their business is mostly very competitive, too. And it's like a sport, except most people in business are trying to get ahead and trying to compete with others. And so, for instance, one exercise I do oftentimes in business is, that with the power words, exercise that, if you go to like chapter 7 in the book, Language for Success, Creative Affirmations, which is on page 75 there, you can have people write down, that exercise I do with the left and the right side of the page, write a vertical line down the center and then write your negative thoughts and self-doubts on the left-hand side. Right, your power words and positive statements on the right-hand side. So, but you could just have people start out by just writing their negative thoughts and self-doubts on the left-hand side, and what they're having difficulty with. You could divide the room into two parts and have the people on the left of the room, write down their negative thoughts and then have them shout those out or, talk about those, and then say the people on the right-hand side of the room, for each of the negative thoughts, let's see, what's a counteracting positive thought? People on the right-hand side of the room could be like the coaching the left-hand side of the room. So that's an example of that, both in sports and in business, that works really well. And oftentimes you get people laughing and coming up with really funny stuff, too. So does that kind of make sense, Amy?
Yeah, what page was that,
yes,
Dr. Trent?
What, Alex?
What page was that? What the
The chapter on affirmations and power words is it starts on page 75, and then if you go to the end of the chapter, which is page 81, there's the little gray box there with the exercise. It's called Affirmations for Competition. And it gives examples of affirmations there. The whole chapter is about negative thoughts and turning those into positive thoughts.
So if you kind of give a group the information in this chapter, kind of go over those each of those topics, restructuring your thoughts, defining affirmations, how affirmations are used, or you could call them power words, either one, guidelines for using affirmations and principles to follow in constructing affirmations, and then moving from negative to positive and using your thoughts as a form of energy, all of those subtitles. If you then, kind of go over those topics or some of those topics, then you could do that exercise of having everyone draw a piece of paper and draw a vertical line down the center and write your negative thoughts on the left-hand side. So actually, I don't have that the left-right exercise. It's not in the book there. It's just the affirmation part. The right-hand side is in the book. But I'm just giving you that verbally. The exercise to write it down on a piece of paper, the negative thoughts on the left and the positive thoughts on the right. And then, but you could then turn it, you could do it individually, that way each person does that, or turn it into a group exercise by, you know, just kind of making it a, you know, left-hand side, okay, everybody on the left side of the room, write down your negative thoughts, and then everyone on the right-hand side, you have them say, okay, well, so now one person give one of your negative thoughts here. Someone says, oh, I'm too, you know, I'm never going to get better or something. And then you ask someone on the right-hand side, okay, what could she say to herself or what could he say? And then come up with, have the right-hand side of the group give five or ten different positive thoughts. So not just one, but, you know, you could try to do several positive statements or power words to counteract that, or to work with that negative thought and to turn it around. So that kind of makes sense.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. Okay. Great. So So anyone? What was the most helpful things that you learned today? Just to summarize, anyone want to jump in and say any nuggets that you learned?
I like this exercise, too. I think very, very practical and very useful.
What's that?
I like these exercises. I think they're very practical and useful. So I appreciate for sharing them. Any information you can send via email, that'd be super. Appreciate
okay,
it.
Okay, great. Yeah.
Thanks.
Same
anyone
for
else?
Me. I think the resources are really helpful in telling us how to apply them to different situations.
Yeah, okay.
For me, I learned that teamwork is taught. It's not inherent to the team. And the success of the activity that you were talking about, it depends on, I think a lot of it depends on how you relate it back to the team. So it needs to have an objective or a purpose. And then after the activity, there should be some dialogue around it and relating it back to the team.
Yeah.
That's what I learned.
Okay, good. Yeah. Activity, the dialogue afterward is going to be really critical, especially right if you can have that dialogue right away, not later, but right after the experience, and that's when people are most keen to share and to they realize, oh wow, this is a real insight that I learned, I can take away from this. So yeah, Greg, are you there? I heard a ding. Maybe he had to leave because we're a little over time here, but that's okay. Anyone else? Yeah, great. Well, thanks everyone for sharing, and Greg for the congratulations on his NCAA getting the Division II soccer team there, and to Annie and Fernando getting the gold medal in the Central America Games. And yeah, thanks, Michelle, for sharing good work with the surfers in Bali and the mountain bikers. That's great. And thanks for sharing it's great that you're doing your articles and tips and saying that, yeah, you're reporting 100% of the time people call back and wanting to have a meeting with you for about working with them. So that's really good news, yeah. And, Amy, good job with the tennis and clients in your Pennsylvania ballet. That's great. And it's great. And Alex, it's great that we could all share the
our sort of tips on getting business for sports psychology. And that's great work, Alex, with your in New York City squash program and spreading the network there. So, yeah, I'll send you my top 10 tips for, you know, as an example that you can use as a tool that often gets passed around, and you could use that or and put in your own contact information. And so that can help as well. And then I'll send you those resources I mentioned too. So,
great.
Great.
I appreciate it.
So okay, good. All right. Well, thanks, everyone. And we'll talk to you.
Have
a great Thanksgiving, everyone.
Thank you. Same.
Yeah,
thanks,
John. Take care.
December 11th, all right?
Okay, great.
Yeah.
Thank you. Okay.
Bye.
Okay, bye-bye.
Bye.